When I was a kid, I used to get the TV guide and I would look straight for 11:30 Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And I didn't pick up on the exact pattern. I just knew it happened every few weeks. But if I saw Saturday Night Live, my reaction was, "Oh, crap." That's exactly my reaction. And I would, first thing, mail came, TV guide, flip for that Saturday night. And if it was Saturday night's main event, it was jackpot.
A whole bunch of girls aren't getting kissed this Saturday.
Exactly.
Okay, hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan, and I'm situated right now. That sounds terrible, situated. I'm sitting in Tübingen, Germany. On the line here, I have Adam.
And I'm sitting in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Where are you situated?
In a chair.
Great. I think it's probably the first time in my life I've used the word situated.
It's not a bad word.
Yeah, it's a great word. Mark it on your calendars.
Yeah.
So, episode 18. That's what
lucky
we're up
number.
To now.
Lucky yeah. number 18.
That's it. You can vote now.
Yeah.
The show can vote. So, we're going to go over part two of how to use your flash a little bit better.
You can drink in Quebec.
I think you can do that when you're like 14, can't you?
Well, you can, but legally.
That's what the French do. Yeah. So, yeah. So what did you shoot this week? Anything? Did you shoot anything?
Yes, I did. We shot, we went for Mother's Day. So it was Mother's Day this Sunday, for those of you who didn't remember. And we went to Seattle to celebrate just for a quick Saturday, Sunday adventure. So I took some pictures again of the kids in Seattle, kids in hotel rooms, that sort of thing. Kids at
were
the
you just
zoo.
In Seattle we like 2 weeks ago?
Maybe a month ago, something like that. Maybe three weeks right. ago. Not that long ago, but we like it. It's close by. Not too far a drive.
I'm not your biographer, so, you know.
Yeah. We like to go there.
So what kind of stuff did you shoot? You shot at the zoo?
Yeah, took some pictures at the zoo, which I found challenging.
Challenging.
Yeah.
What sort of challenges do you present themselves at the zoo?
I found it the background very green and, I had a hard time with the white balance because it was cloudy and it was very green. And so when I set it to cloudy, it was very, very green, yellowy green. Mm-hmm. And then when I set it to auto, it was also too green. And I tried sunny, and sunny kind of overcompensated the other direction.
Yeah.
So I just basically went with auto, and then I had to do some manipulating after the fact, but still couldn't get the colors exactly the way I would have liked them.
Hello, black and white.
Yep, exactly.
That's my move, and partially because I'm colorblind, so that makes it fun. So I it's difficult for me to get colors bang on anyways. But yeah, so don't ever trust your LCD screen implicitly.
Right. No, I didn't. I always go for color. I always go off the computer.
Right.
Yeah.
Which you can't exactly trust either unless you've calibrated, but that's a whole nother kettle of fish and, it gets it pretty close though.
Yeah.
So good. So you overcame it by shooting in auto and then dealing with it in the AM.
Yes.
It's because you're shooting RAW then?
Yes.
Okay. If you're shooting JPEG, what would you have done?
Given up.
With JPEG, and for people who don't know any better, RAW basically saves all the information. It creates a huge file, and it makes it really easy to change the white balance later. There's a whole other set of issues with RAW, and we'll get into that later. But the point is, if you shoot JPEG, and I recommend you do at this point, if you're listening to our show, you still can manipulate color. It's not a total loss. It's just that you don't have the latitude, essentially, to change. You can't change it an awful lot and still get good results. So if you get a pretty close. You can sort of take down some of the green or something like that. But that we might save that for a post-production show. So we still want people to be able to print pictures out of their camera right now.
Right.
So there.
Okay. I think 2 minutes back, you might have said JPEG and then described the information of RAW, but
right.
Mistakenly used the word JPEG just to clarify. You were talking about RAW initially, and then when you were talking about the large file sizes with all the information and making it easier. I think you said JPEG, but you meant RAW, just to clarify.
RAW is large files. JPEG is the compressed files.
Right.
That's the difference, just to clear up. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Great. I forget what I shot. I shot some stuff.
I didn't ask you.
No, I know, but I'm just going to skip ahead because, you know... I'm asking me. I'm that guy who interviews himself.
All right.
I shot one thing I did shoot. I shot like a family portrait, like a group photo, like a huge extended family. Not
right.
huge, not like 40 people. I think it was like 18 people or something like that.
Right.
So I shot that. That presents a challenge in itself, getting enough light on everybody's face and everybody.
And this is outdoors you took the picture?
Yeah. Yeah, I was at a barbecue, and waited till the sun went down to about 7 o'clock at night, so we had kind of like a nice kind of glow going, nicer light, and then used a couple of flashes in umbrellas to fill in everybody's faces.
Right.
So the challenge for me is it's difficult to make 18 people look really artistic, like the cover of, you know, Vanity Fair magazine, but. That's not what they want anyway, so they just want nice, good exposure and good colors. So we got it.
Good show. This little note about taking group shots. I was at the Seattle Zoo and coming out of one of the pavilions, and you know I had my camera bag and camera on my neck, and lady stops me and says, Oh, could you take a group shot? And she was with a big group of family. I don't know, probably 15 people, multiple kids. And says, "Oh, you're our guy. You look like you could take a picture." So she hands me, you know, a nice Nikon SLR, of course, set to auto.
Right.
And I'm thinking, you know, with the pop-up flash, and I'm thinking, do I dare mess with the settings when I take this picture? And so, you know, I kind of thought about it for a second and just thought, you know what, I'm just going to take it. I'm not going to mess with their camera. So I just took, but I just was wondering in terms of a photo etiquette question, come across this situation, what would you have done there? Would you have just taken their auto picture or would you have played with the settings to get the optimal exposure?
It's a good question because that's happened to me many times. And I generally don't mess with their camera. Because they are going to forget to put it back or not know how to put it back to their comfort level.
Right. But so, you could have just switched it back to auto quite quickly.
Yeah, you could do that. But especially like with a Nikon, I know how to use it, but I'm not as familiar with it instantly. And I find that people in that situation don't want to spend 5 minutes. They kind of want to get it done and move on.
Yeah, that's the way I looked at it.
So what I generally do, and... this requires that you have business cards, though. If I have my camera with me, I will take a picture with their camera. I will actually make them stop. I'll take a picture with my camera.
Right.
On the full manual settings. And everyone gets a big laugh out of it. Oh, hi, why are you taking our picture? And then I'd give them a business card and say, here, send me an email and I'll just email it to you. It's a snapshot. It's the same snapshot they would have had.
Right.
And it's, but hopefully better, and it's just good advertising for me.
Yeah, smart move.
So... we're going to get you some business cards for the two hosers, and that's what you're going to do from now on.
All right.
Just drive
Sounds
these
good.
People. Because those are the people you want to listen to the podcast right there. As soon as you see that auto setting.
I agree.
Yeah. So there we go. Before we move on, we are moving on. Before we move on to the photo challenge for this week, I wanted to reinforce something that we talked about a few episodes back, and it's starting to really come into play now. Exposure compensation.
Right.
If you haven't heard the episode... go back and listen to it. If you haven't read the blog posts on it, read the blog post for just a quick hit on what exposure compensation is. It becomes what
you're not talking to me right now, are you?
I'm not talking to you because you seem to have it mastered.
No, I was also on the episode, so I don't really want to go back.
No. No, I. You know what? It's your homework this week, Adam, is to go back and listen to that episode again. Although the good thing about the iPod is you can listen to it at double speed. That's kind of cool. It's a good feature.
It's a great feature.
Yeah. But from now on, I'm just going to talk half speed so that it sounds normal. No, but with the better weather coming, hopefully Vancouver's getting better weather. We've had summer for the last 6 weeks here. No joke.
Yeah, no, it blows here.
Okay, well, good weather's coming, I'm sure of it, because Vancouver, it doesn't rain every single day. Right. But you're going to start getting some sunshine and some nice kind of bright lights and, you know, deep blue skies. And it's going to really mess up your metering. And not mess it up, but as you, you know, do evaluative or matrix metering or whatever you want to call it, your camera is going to kind of, well, go back, listen to the episode. All I'm just saying is exposure compensation really is getting very important now.
Okay.
Sunny weather, less clouds, exposure compensation. So there you go.
And you're usually going under again, right? That was the advice?
Almost always, depending on the situation, there's a few times when you want to go over, but very rarely. For your walking around shots, minus two-thirds of underexposed is my baseline. That's my zero.
Okay.
There you go. It's a photo challenge this week. This one was suggested by Eric from Parma, Ohio. And he actually said, hey, maybe you guys could do a photo using the pop-up flash outside. Because we talked about that a couple episodes back.
Right.
So, I did. Did you?
I did as well.
Awesome. I'm looking at Sarah eating the ice cream. That's the picture we're going with, right?
Yeah, this was the zoo. This was the zoo on Sunday, Mother's Day.
Okay.
I really just liked the ice cream in this picture, so.
It's great.
Yeah, it was delicious.
So, tell me what, would you have normally taken this with the flash?
Probably not. I probably wouldn't have. But since that was the challenge, I went out of my way to take it. You could probably tell me because I didn't take this picture without the flash to sort of see a comparison, which in hindsight would have probably been a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice, you know, the catch light, which wasn't there without the flash, and that tiny little catch light is much smaller than the one I usually get from my external flash. So I'm guessing that that was a bonus versus had I taken that picture with no flash, I don't think I would have got any catch light in this picture.
You would have got a very little bit. I can see there is catch light around the two little dots in her eyes.
Right. Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah. And as we move on, speaking about if you don't know what a catch light is, it's basically the little reflection in a person's eyes. And you can see it in movies every now and then, in lots of photographs. It is a great way to bring someone's eyes out and really make them pop. And in this case, because we use the pop-up flash, which we don't always recommend, but we know that's what you're using, so we're going to talk about it, you get the catch light basically, essentially dead center in her pupils.
Right.
Almost dead center on her left eye. It's a little off, but close enough. When we start using camera or the flash off the camera, we can start actually positioning where that catch light will show up in the eyes.
Or bouncing the flash, you can also get that effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but for now, that's what Adam's talking about. It's the two pinpoint dots, the reflection of the flash in her eyes. And if you look around on the, I'm going to say brown part of her eyes, you can see there is a reflection of something else.
Yeah.
Which it's obviously not nearly as strong as the one in the flash, so. Okay, anything else about this picture? That's a good picture. It's a great little moment, too.
Not really. I just, I saw it as an opportunity to use the flash outdoors. Like I said, I didn't take too many pictures with this setup, because most of the time I had specifically in mind, and I did use the external flash for some of the pictures outdoor where I wanted flash to light them. I just find that the pop-up
too small, I have to be too close, and it's too limiting that, mm-hmm. you know, I did this specifically for the challenge, but certainly it's never my first choice considering I do have the external flash.
Right. See, sometimes I don't like to travel with my external flash. I just like to be really, you know, unencumbered.
Right.
And
unfettered.
Then unfettered was what I meant to say. Or yeah. Situated. But if I take my 5D, I have no flash at all. There's nothing built in. But in my case, well, first of all, what I like about yours before we move on to mine is Sarah's face and the background are very well mixed. Like it's a very good the background would probably be overexposed had you not used the flash.
Okay.
It probably would have, the camera would have exposed for her face, and which would have meant the background, judging by, I can't really tell, but it looks like it would have been a lot brighter. And now what it does is basically it exposes for everything, and you can now see the background and her face. So it kind of flattens the latitude of your image.
Right.
So there's that.
And I think, if I remember correctly, we were sort of in an outdoor food area, and there was umbrellas over the table that did cast a very slight shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that the flash at this close range was enough to wipe out the light shadow that was on her.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
No question. Actually, when you're in close, your pop-up flash does provide a lot of light. It's not the most flattering light. Like you can see on Sarah's face looks very flat. There's no real shadows. It's just boom, right? The flash just goes off right in her face and it doesn't really add any depth to the picture.
Right.
Now, you know, that's what your pop-up flash does. And as we get better and better and move on to the external flash, we'll go over ways on how to really use it to our advantage and get those shadows that we need and that depth and all that stuff. But for now, we just want to learn how to use it.
Okay.
So we'll get there.
Let's look at your picture.
One last question. Did you take this portrait style or landscape and then crop it?
I cropped it, yeah. It was taken landscape style.
It was taken landscape. I thought so because of where the flash is in her eyes and the way there are no shadows. It says to me that the flash was above the lens. If you take it in portrait style, the flash is now going to be on the side and in close can create kind of some strange shadows. So, okay.
All right.
Let's move on to mine. Mine, I just took I wanted to go for a snapshot. I didn't want to do anything artsy. I wanted to basically replicate a situation that our listeners might find themselves in. A barbecue in Germany with a cat. I wish that roof behind was hot tin, but it's not.
Bratwurst? Did you have bratwurst?
Yeah, I did. I did actually.
Delicious.
Although in some kind of mine was like a weird kind of French one. As a matter of fact, go figure. I think it was French. It's got a French name, but happened to like it. But no, we had it at our. This is actually wasn't, my photo. Was it?
It wasn't Oscar Mayer, was it?
No. It wasn't an Oscar Mayer wiener. No, this. I took my picture. Was a shot of one of our listeners, actually.
So oh yeah.
I went and tracked down one of our listeners who lives very near to me, nearby. So that wasn't too hard to do.
Also happens to be your brother.
no relation.
Okay.
But anyways, I wanted to replicate a situation when you're kind of at a, you know, just a snapshot that you're going to make. You're hanging out with friends and you want to just, you know, quickly pop a snapshot. So I did take a before and after.
Okay.
So if we look at the before picture, that's the one 11B there.
Yep, I'm looking at.
First of all, you tell me what you see if you'd like.
I see a lot of shadow.
Right.
And I see a brightly lit people in the background, but I see your subject is very much in shadow. And I can't see a lot of details on his face because it is quite a dark shadow.
Right. So the bulk of the exposure, like I purposely chose a difficult situation. I mean, it was before 7 o'clock at night, so it was getting later in the evening, but it was still kind of this direct sunlight situation where it was hitting him. And so it did create a bunch of shadows, like in his shirt, the beer bottle. You can't really see. I mean, you can see, but it's in shadow, and we lose much of his face. And so I did that completely on purpose, because the camera's going to have a difficult time exposing. Now this is on AV mode. I didn't go at anything special. This is on AV mode at -2/3. Like I said, that's my zero baseline, -2/3 exposure compensation. And then I went ahead and snapped the exact same photo with the flash on. I hit the button on the side of the camera, forced the flash to pop up. It's completely unmodified. It's just my regular pop-up flash. The exposure is exactly the same in terms of the f-stop and the shutter speed and all that. It's just now that the flash is filling in the shadows.
Right.
So our primary light source for the entire picture is still the sun.
Yep.
It's the flash isn't doing the heavy lifting. All it's doing is highlighting the stuff that we couldn't see before. So that's why we use it in those situations. Now, if the subject was standing much further back, it probably wouldn't have as much effect on him.
Right.
We are kind of limited. Although I wasn't exactly close.
You know what's awesome is that your subject is making, like, you know, a very strange look or smile in the poor picture and a very nice smile in the good picture. So also
that was
also,
not on purpose.
Also helpful.
I guess it was. I was trying to get the exact same photo, but I didn't want to direct him. But he didn't really seem to understand A, why I was taking two photos, and B, why would you use the flash outside?
Right. And the way I look at it, it's like, this is what you get when you don't use the pop-up. It's kind of an eh. And then this is how you sell pop-ups right here. This is what happens when you use the pop-up flash. Ta-da! Yeah.
That's unfair manipulation. I would never do that.
Right.
I wouldn't do that. No, I took this, and also I should mention that I did take this with my 40D and the kit lens, the 17-85. So I didn't go out there with my pro setup and knock it out, you know, with my $4,000 setup and fire away. This is the stock stuff. So you can do this, is what I'm telling you.
All right.
It takes a little bit of practice how to get into this, but I want you to go out and try it.
I'm just, the whole time, I'm not even looking at your subject, unfortunately. I'm staring at that barbecue in the background.
Yes.
Getting hungry.
It was good stuff. Yeah. So, anyways, that's this week's photo challenge. Brought to you by, well, nobody yet, but Adam wants his free lenses, so...
Exactly.
Somebody do it. So what's
today's?
Come
on, Canon.
Yeah, I hope it is Canon. Yeah, since that's what we shoot with.
That's right.
So today's topic relates to the photo challenge in that we're going to go a little bit more about our pop-up flash.
Okay.
We're going to try to exhaust the pop-up flash the best we can because we want to talk about how to get better pics indoors. We're going to use our pop-up flash indoors now. We learned a little way to use it outdoors. How do we use it indoors? We want to figure out how to get better pictures indoors. And when somebody finds out, could they please tell me?
Right.
Because it is almost impossible to get really good, to get great pictures with your pop-up flash is impossible. Don't beat yourself up if you can't do it. Your pop-up flash is really, it's any port in a storm. So that, with that in mind, and we're in a storm, let's find a port, okay?
Okay.
That's a sailing analogy, I think.
Not a very good one.
Well, a port in a storm, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. What would Barry O say, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was in an electronics store not too long ago, and I saw a pop-up flash modifier, so they do exist. It was Gary Fong, and it was
It had a funny name. I don't know. The puffer. That's what it was. The puffer. And it kind of wrapped around your pop-up flash. So
that guy has the seems to have the market cornered on flash modifiers in that because he makes one for like a big flash as well.
Right.
You know, he make a light sphere or something like that.
Yeah, but, yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah, that was the big version.
Yeah. I've never shot with them. Some people like them. Some people find that you can get better results with other things and. We'll get into that, how to get great results with your external flash at a later date, but we want to go over some of the more of the basics. And so I'm glad you bring that up, though, because if the question was, hey, Alan, should I buy a modifier for my pop-up flash? My answer is no, I wouldn't.
Save your money.
Save your money. Use some Kleenex before then. Tape a little piece of Kleenex over top or something like that. And just put your money towards buying an external flash. You get much better results. So, for now, in order to sort of explain what's going on with the flash, we need to revisit. Just not really revisit, but I want to mention way back when we first started shooting on AV mode or A mode or whatever we want to call it, aperture priority mode. And the difference. The difference between why some people are having issues, because I've had a couple people ask me about using their flash, and they're trying to tell me that they can't get a proper exposure in the sun while using the pop-up flash. And they told me all about, you know, how they did it, and they said, well, they didn't really know how to use it. They didn't know how to get the flash up, so they were shooting on auto mode.
Right.
Now, auto mode does a, you know, decent job, but auto mode in general and auto ISO, but auto mode, put it this way, your camera thinks you're stupid. It assumes that you're stupid and it does everything for you and it decides what you want, right?
Yep.
And it basically, rather than disappoint you, it just aims for the middle. Everything is in the middle. ISO is in the middle somewhere, aperture's in the middle, shutter speed's in the middle, a good old average so that nothing gets messed up. Also, so none of your pictures look awesome.
Right.
They all look fine, but not eye-popping on auto. So what happens on auto, or just auto ISO, is that it only goes down to ISO 400. And it only goes as high as ISO 800. Now, I don't know if that's on every single camera, but for quite some time, those were the parameters. ISO only would go down that low. So therefore, a lot of light, you're getting a lot of light, and out in the sun, the bright sun, it's going to be overexposed.
Right.
Because you want to shoot at ISO 100.
Yep.
So that's one major reason to shoot in AV mode. Even if you're going to mess the pictures up, get used to it. Get used to doing it just so you can have a low ISO outside. So
good
there's
tip.
That.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip.
So yeah, so if everything's overexposed, that's probably the situation because you'd be down to F22 or something like that, and that's not good for anybody.
Right.
Now, getting back to flash, using your flash up until now, well, up until last week, we used our pop-up flash as a fill flash. We didn't use it as our primary light source.
Right.
The sun was the major light. And we just use the flash to fill in the blanks. Well, when you're inside and you're using your flash, it's likely going to be your primary light source. So the bulk of the exposure is going to come from that pop-up flash. So, first of all, something I want to try to explain to people and try to get across is that for the most part, this isn't 100% accurate, but for what we're doing right now, please just trust me. Don't argue. I'm talking to you directly, Adam.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to argue.
Your flash is unaffected by your shutter speed.
You've mentioned this before.
I have mentioned it. Yep. Meaning you get up to your maximum sync speed, the fastest that your camera can shoot, and still use the flash, which is probably 1/200th, give or take.
Yep.
If you're inside and your primary, like let's say you're in like kind of a darker room, and your primary light source is your flash, your exposure will be the same at 1/200th of a second, as it is at 1/60th of a second, as it is at 1/5th of a second.
Really?
For the most part, depending on the situation. So here's the experiment I suggest that you do. I even redid it yesterday just to make sure I hadn't forgotten anything. Go into some sort of a darker room where you don't have any window light coming in and you don't have any lights on. You can have a light on, but don't have it in the picture because that's going to change things. So let's say you're sort of a dark room and I want you to set your camera to manual.
Yeah.
To manual mode. Set it to pick an aperture. Just pick f5.6. That's a good middle of the road. Okay?
Yep.
ISO, say 400.
Okay.
And set your use your pop-up flash. You're in AV mode. Or sorry, you're in manual mode. So you want to pop up, hit your pop-up flash. And set your shutter speed to 1/5th of a second. And take a picture of something in the room. Now change your shutter speed. Change nothing else but your shutter speed. Change that to 1/60th of a second. Take the same picture with the flash.
Okay.
Do it one more time at 1/200th of a second. Now compare all three pictures. Give or take a little bit, the exposure is going to be generally the same.
Okay.
So that will help you understand what is going on with your flash. I hope. Maybe next week you report back to me with some questions and say, hey, why does that work like that?
Why does it work like that?
Because I said, don't argue with me.
Okay. I was just asking a question.
Yeah. Well.
I don't want to wait till next week. Is this a cliffhanger?
I hadn't really thought about how to explain it clearly yet.
Okay. That gives you a week.
Yeah. No, your exposure in terms of flash is generally controlled by the aperture. So if you were to change that, you would find out that your exposure would likely be different, or the required flash output would change. Like your camera would pump out more flash. Because last week two weeks ago, we talked about how your ETTL works, right? How it shoots out a test flash.
Yeah.
So if all we change is the shutter speed, your flash output is the same.
Okay.
It's when you change.
Because that's the primary light source, that's dictating the exposure for the most part.
Correct.
Okay.
And it
makes sense. I don't think you need to worry about it for next week.
Awesome.
Homework done.
Awesome.
All right.
So when using the indoor pop-up flash, what are some of the challenges? Like, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you face personally?
It has a limited range in terms of how much it can light up a room.
True. But the fact that it's such a small light source, first of all, provides really harsh light. It's not flattering. You're right. It doesn't light up a whole room. So it is good from in close. But what else do you find that happens when you're right in close with somebody?
Red eye?
Red eye's one thing. How do you get rid of that?
The red eye reduction post-production.
There's that. Which, have you ever found awesome results?
No.
I have found acceptable results some of the time in iPhoto or whatever program you happen to use. I'm sure they're all basically the same technology. It just finds red and turns it black or something like that.
Yeah.
Your camera does have a built-in red eye reducer.
Yeah.
Which I find to be a colossal pain. I don't like it.
I agree.
Essentially, what happens when you get red eye is because you're inside, your pupils are very large. The camera shoots in, it hits the blood vessels in the back of your eye, reflects back into the camera, it's red. Now, if your pupils are very narrow, there's very little chance that you're going to get the light in and out reflecting on those blood vessels. So what your red eye reduction does is, if you ever tried it, you find that it shoots out that kind of pulse of light at someone first.
Yeah.
And then takes, like, or like a series of three flashes or whatever camera system you're using. sends out those little test flashes, essentially tells your eye, hey, it's bright, why don't you... Dilated is when it goes open, right? What do you call it? Do you call it when your pupils go the other way?
Constrict.
Constrict?
Yep.
So it tells your pupils, hey, man, it is bright in here, constrict. Then it pops the flash, the real flash, and hopefully reduces the red eye. Now, that's just, I can't stand that light. It's so distracting. So ultimately, there really is no good solution to red eye. I find it is a little bit better with a DSLR versus the point and shoot, because there is a little bit of a distance separation from the lens to the pop-up flash.
Right.
Not crazy, not awesome, but with the point and shoots, it's almost right next to the lens, and that's when you really get red eye. Now, the one challenge that I find the most difficult to deal with is when you're taking the pop-up flash picture, I always find people's faces are just blown out, way too bright.
Right.
The light is so harsh, and it's just really unflattering. Not just the angle, which you can't do anything about with the pop-up, but it's always washed out in too much light, in my opinion.
I find a lot of people anticipate the flash being right in their face too, and often will close their eyes or blink before the picture is even taken.
That's a great point, but do you know what's going on there?
No.
This is I'm not even in the show notes, folks, and Adam just brought that up out of nowhere. Awesome.
It's my years of improv training.
We talked about the ETTL last week and how ETTL works and how it shoots a test flash out, bounces back, comes back through the lens, the camera measures how much flash it really needs, right?
Yeah.
Many people actually react to that test flash. And so the time frame between that test flash and the real flash is such that they're blinking from that test flash. And that's why they're blinking in your photo.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't have any solutions for that, right? I do have one, but we're going to talk about that later.
Okay.
So that's... But for now, let's talk about how do we lessen the flash in someone's face?
With the pop-up. Is this where
I'm going to give you a hint?
Our tissue paper comes in.
That's possible. We can modify it. But let's say we didn't modify it. Let's just say we showed up at a party, we didn't modify it, and we're taking pictures, and everybody is just looking like a white Casper the Ghost.
Oh, you can use the flash exposure compensation.
Absolutely. Our camera, as we talked about before, has the exposure compensation built in. When we're outside and we want to dial it down, -2/3, for instance, there's a separate setting for the exposure compensation for the flash called FEC, or flash exposure compensation. We can do the exact same thing. So we can set our camera just to take our pictures inside on AV mode, and we can dial it in and say, you know what? Do it at -1 stop, and we can see what kind of results that we get.
Now, do you have a tip for those of us who want to be using that flash indoors in an average lighting situation, like you said, on the sunny day, the -2/3 under? Do you have a starting point that you typically use for the flash exposure?
This one is a little bit more kind of fly-by-wire. You got to kind of feel it out.
Yeah.
But I generally try to keep it – oftentimes if people are really close to the camera, I keep it at around -1. But I constantly check. I am chimping to make sure that that's kind of right in the wheelhouse.
Okay.
And I also find that it's just a more subtle result rather than have flash blasted in your face. It's just a little more subtle. it's still not extremely flattering, like having a nice, you know, off-camera flash in an umbrella and all that stuff. But that's a little ways down the road still. How many times have I said that's down the road? But that's one of the things.
I'm not keeping track, so yeah. I'm going to say several.
Several. The answer is several. So that's what I want you to focus on, is find that on your camera. Find the flash exposure compensation.
Okay.
Now, if you're inside at a party in or wherever it is that you are, and I tend to not dial the regular exposure compensation down when I'm inside. Sometimes I do, but my new benchmark is actually zero. That's my new zero is zero.
Now, this is again probably jumping ahead a little bit, but for those people out there with an external flash, are you still using the flash exposure compensation when you're bouncing it?
When I'm bouncing it, sometimes, not as often.
Okay.
Not
just
as
curious.
Often.
Just curious.
Yeah. Oftentimes when I'm bouncing the flash, I still, in certain situations, will use a manual flash based on what I want. But that's a whole nother kettle of fish, so no confusing there.
Okay.
Okay, Adam, so this is it. This is it's getting close to your bedtime.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you a decision.
Okay.
Do you want to discuss, it's going to take a little while to get into, so I know which way I'm leaning. Do you want to talk about dragging the shutter today, or hint at it and talk about it next week?
Hint.
Hint, hint, hint. Okay. Next week, make sure you tune in next week, because we're going to talk about something to do with directly related to how to take better photos with your pop-up flash indoors, is a little move I like to call dragging the shutter. The reason I like to call it that is because that's what it's called, and everybody else calls it that.
Very creative.
Yeah. So I didn't really make it my own. I just copied everybody else. But it is. Have you done that yet? Because I posted a blog post about it a while ago.
Yes, I have.
And?
It's a pretty cool move.
How comfortable are you with it?
I would say at the time you wrote that post, I did a whole bunch of it, and mm-hmm. I felt pretty comfortable, but I have to say that I probably, in my situation at home, I'm pretty comfortable now that I kind of have a sort of a go-to settings that I use. So sometimes it is dragging the shutter, but more often than not, it isn't.
Right. It can be a little complicated. It sounds a lot more complicated than it is. Especially
that we've talked this much, just how about you just throw it a quick kind of definition? We can get into more detail, but you just tell people what it is.
What we're going to try to accomplish is, you know how we were outside and we use the sun as a primary light source and we use the flash to fill in the blanks?
Right.
So essentially we balanced the ambient light with the flash.
Right.
That's what we're doing inside. We're trying to balance the darkness, bring the darkness up so that we get some exposure from that, but use the flash as our primary source of light. Does that make sense?
It does. And why is it termed dragging the flash?
Well, I'm going to give you a hint.
Dragging the shutter.
Dragging the shutter is a... I'll give you a hint. It has a lot to do with the experiment I talked about earlier, about the shutter speeds.
Okay.
So if you do that, I did that on purpose. If you do that, and then next week we talk about dragging the shutter, you're going to be much better off for it.
Okay, then.
Okay, that's dragging the shutter next week on episode 19.
What about a new photo challenge?
I got one.
All right.
Are you ready for it? Unless you have an awesome one, because mine's pretty good.
I don't have one, so.
Okay. Then mine is much better.
Yeah.
This week's challenge. Now, this one is a massive challenge for me, and just in terms of location, because we're going back to Sunset.
Okay.
Or sunrise, up to you. Once again, it doesn't matter to me, sunrise, sunset. You tend, being on the ocean, I find that you have better sunsets than we do here, but I'm gonna take that risk.
Okay.
The challenge is to get a picture of a sunset with a person in the foreground lit with the pop-up flash.
Again with the pop-up.
Yeah.
Really?
Adam, you're, well, this is what people are using right now.
Okay.
And so we're going to do it with the pop-up. We're really close to moving on to the external flash, which I know you want to flex your muscles and show off all that you've learned.
I can't wait.
Because, yeah, you're the master.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
So, no, actually, yeah, I've seen Adam's pictures. They are very good. You learned very fast. But I want to completely exhaust this, the basic principles before we move on. And also, I recognize that a lot of people listening are probably still using the pop-up flash.
But they're going to get an external flash for their birthday or for Father's Day or Mother's Day or whatever holiday that they need to get a flash for.
Once they realize the extent, once they realize how quickly the extent of their pop-up flash maxes out, they absolutely will buy one for their birthday or get one for Father's Day or whatever it is.
Right.
So there's that. So that's what we're looking at. That's the challenge for this week. And that's the end of episode 18.
Okay, and just so I can hammer this point home one more time, I have to say that outside of the 50 millimeter lens and the upgrade that had on my photos, right behind it, I would have to say, is the upgrade made by purchasing an external flash that's got a swivel head on it. So right up there, pretty hard one to say which ultimately makes better pictures, but they're pretty close.
Why a swivel head?
Well, just so that you can bounce it off the roof or off the ceiling or off the wall and not have that flash facing right into the person's face.
Okay.
Any other reason?
No. I was just, in case people didn't know, that's the ultimate goal. Is to first of all, yeah, you like if you really want to go crazy, you want to get your camera off or your flash off of the camera and off somewhere else. But really, just bouncing it makes a ridiculous difference.
Yeah,
like it's unbelievable. It's night and day, the difference that it makes bouncing it.
And so we're not getting a commission here on how many external flashes get purchased. We just really think that it makes for better pictures. So
yes, especially if you have kids. Inside, running around, it is invaluable.
And for those of you that do have young children, and you want to take lots of nice pictures, count on spending a lot of time indoors for the first little while. So, good opportunity to get an external flash, the birth of a new child.
Well, fortunately, I already have one. So,
yeah,
a flash that is.
You don't, yeah, you just need to add child.
Just going to add child, and we're sorted out here. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I have three flashes, but I only use one of them on my camera at any given time. So there you go. I highly recommend it, but up until now, I really want people to understand what is happening, because it's like jumping into a F1 race car if you don't know how to drive standard. Which is a bad example because F1 uses the paddles. So I should have said IndyCar. Awesome.
Well, thanks again, Captain Analogy.
Yeah, okay. It's like learning to drive an IndyCar, but you don't know how to drive standard. So we're going to jump into a good old 1980 Toyota Tercel and with a brown door and no reverse.
It's like learning to drive a Prius when you really own a station wagon.
That's right. I actually had, just a little aside, that was my first car. I bought off a friend of mine a $200 1980 Toyota Tercel.
Yes.
Beige.
I had
with
one
a
too.
Brown door.
I had a blue one.
Really?
Not 1980. I think mine was 1986. But
oh, yeah. Yours is much nicer than mine. I had it for about a month and reverse broke. Just broke. So I drove it for two more years before I didn't dim or fix it. I smashed it up instead. But I was actually – I would always be super conscious of where I parked so I didn't have to back out. And – or I would just Fred Flintstone it. So there were times when I would parallel park with the door open and I'm pushing the car back with my foot.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've come
a long way. I can't believe you paid $200 for that piece of crap.
Oh, it was money well spent, man. It was awesome. Love that car.
Did you purchase that with your paper route money?
No, I had a job at that point. I just couldn't be bothered to buy a decent car. But that's how I learned to drive stick shift.
All right.
So that's my whole point, is I had a $200 car, beat the crap out of it, and then I got a $300 pickup truck with an automatic.
And now you're driving a Lexus.
And now I'm, yeah. Now I'm riding the train.
I thought I was riding a bike.
I do. I have a bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it. So that's the challenge. So, Adam, where can people find you and your Seattle pictures?
They can find them at schwartzchronicles.com. My wife, I think, is currently writing a blog with some of my favorite pictures from the weekend. And I really do think that there are a few winners in the bunch. So check those out. And how about yourself?
Are they up,
Alan,
already?
They might be. If not, they will be by the time this is posted. Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, for your purposes, I think Lisa just said they are up. So
awesome. Because I've been checking, but last I saw was something about your birthday or something boring like that.
Yeah. I use the Gorillapod to take those pictures.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, as usual, you can find me at alanetridge.com or alanetridge.de. You can find the two of us. We're the two hosers. Let's start that again. We're at two hosers on the Twitter. We are, I did a bunch of Twittering last night, by the way.
Good job.
Yeah, no, it was nothing, I don't know, it was kind of an experiment. There was some sort of, something was trending. Does that sound like something that happens? Can something trend?
I believe so. I don't ever use it, but Lisa said something about trending the other day. That means a lot of people are talking about that.
Right. Well, she follows me, so she might have seen all my 8 or 9 random tweets about Canadian band name movies.
Okay.
Canadian, yeah, people were mashing together famous Canadian bands with movie titles. And some were funny and some were just not that funny and oft repeated. But so I did a bunch of Twittering finally.
Well, you picked a good opportunity. It's very riveting stuff there.
Yeah, really productive. So, you know, guess what was trending a couple days ago when you're listening to this? Yeah, something boring. But I went super meta on one of them. So anyways, we're Two Hosers at Twitter. We are at twohosers.com and look for us on iTunes. That's where you can subscribe to our show because some people actually have been having issues with our RSS feed. There's I got a couple emails from different spots around the world where it's just getting bounced back. They're not being able to get it. It ends up showing up 2 days later in their iTunes, but I'm looking into that. If you are listening to this, we're going to look into that. We're going to do our best to fix that and get our feed up and current immediately. But until then, subscribe on iTunes and it should show up.
Cool.
So that's the end of that.
Take us home here, buddy.
All right. So until next time, till that will be episode 19 when we do Dragging the Shutter, go out there and make some better pictures.